sutrara, a da ora za urgeli dobara, koji paole, može mira. Niste farota koji ta sa, lag toc gorjača gaza, kao kur porinče gelolo da sa, tu farolo moga ča fasa. Mira, 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 mira. Beo ta vursang lele mapša sukrara, a ta vora za urgelin gobara, koji paole, može mi. Lele, je kitec kušik te bos lele, kac grn makas lele, terna kadis je moga ta čelas lele. Mira, 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 mira. Lele mapša sukrara, a ta vora za urgelin gobara, koji paole, može mira. Petoile, nato, tagave utoile, calzatia moja fotoile, ani moga ce gordui tutoile. Mira, 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 mira. Beo ta mursang lele sukrara, a ta vora za urgelin gobara, koji paole, može mira.
Namaskar, I'm Richie Uleta, and I'm so ISO guest, Michael Woods, Labour Party, so MP. Tikke delay zala, tikun to yata muncher, ami, ani kayan, ai kayan.
Prayena slonento, Pranti Ravana, Atam Budin Zalon Zanto, Sastan Mozo Gam, Moje Nau Prashantinto, Kona Chazalant Samprana, Podana Dantu, Tode Ursa Adiham, Prayena Slonento, Pranti Ravana, Atam Budin Zalon Zanto, Sastan Mozo Gam, Moje Nau Prashantinto, Samprana Podana Dantu Samprana ಮನಸ್ಸು ಕೇಳು ಕೇಳು ಈ ಬಾವುಡಿ ರಸ್ತಾರು ಮೇಲೆ ದೀಸ್ಟ್ ಗುಡಾನು ದುಸರ ಖುಷಿ ಸಲ್ತ ಆತ್ಲೇತೆ ಬೂರ್ಗೆ ಪೋ ಆತಾ ಮಾಯಾ ಸಲಿ ಖುಷೆ ಪ್ರಾಯ ಮುಜಿ ವಾಡ್ತಾನ ಸಗಳೆ ಬೋತೋನ್ ಗೆಲೆ ಅವಶೆ ವಿಷಯ ತು ಕೂಡ್ತಾನ ತೋಡ್ಯಾಂಗ್ ಲಾತಾ ಸಲಿಯ ಪೀಶೆ ಪೂರ್ಮಕಾಯೆ ದೋಳು ಸಾಲೆಲೆ ನಾತಶೆ ಥೋಡ್ಯಾ ಊರ್ಸಾ ಆದಿ ಹಾ ಪ್ರಾಯ ನಾಸ್ಲೋ ನೆಂಟು ಪ್ರಾಯ ತಿರಾವಾನ ಆತಾ ಬುದ್ಧಿ ಜಲೋ ಸಾಂಟು ಸಾಸ್ತಾನ ಮೋಸೋ ಗಾಂವ್ ಮೋಜೆ ನಾವು ಪ್ರಶಾಂತ ಪಿಂಟು ಕೋಣಾಂಚ ಸಾಳಾಂತ ಸಾಂಪ್ರಾಣ
ಕೀತೆನ್ಸ್ ಕೆಲ್ಯಾರ ಮೈ ಕೂಚಿನ ಕೋಣಾಚೆ ಚೌಕಾನಾಡ್ ದೋರ್ಚಿನ ಕಾಜಾರ್ ಜಾಲ್ಯಾ ಬೋಗೋರ್ ರಾವಚಿನ ಚೀಡೂ ಚೌತಾ ಫಿಟಿ 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 ಮುಂಟತ್ ಮಕ್ಕ ಬೊಂಬೊಯ್ಚಿ ಬಿರ್ ಮುಟ್ಟಿ ಸೋಲೆ ಮಕ್ಕ ಮೋಗ ಚುದಟ್ಟ ಚೀಟಿ ಕೋಣ ಕೂಸಾ ಫೋಡಿ ನಮಿಟಿ ಆ ಸಾಂಗ್ ಮಾಕ ಏತ ಚೀತು ರಸ್ತ್ಯಾ ಚೋತಾನಾ ಬೆಷ್ಟಿತ್ ಮಾತಾ ತಾಂಶೆ ದೊಳೆ ಮುಟ್ಟತ್ ವಶೆ 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 ಒತ್ತೋವಾನಿ ಮಾಕಾಚ್ ಪೋಯ್ತಾ ಕಿತೆ ಬಾಬಾ ತೂ ಕಾಜಾತಾ ಪೋಳು ಪಾಯ ಭಾಷೆ ನಾವು ರಾಂದು ಜನ ಗೋಸ್ತಾಚಿ ಸೊ moșii atau un bon de-ar fi să cim. Am casa arzată în verisul, noromos o burgonui zun. Rorona ca citu, casa arzată tuți, mozot sondri.
Wish you all a good afternoon, listeners. Aau Audrey swagat and namaskar korta tumka sogliang. Aitso suzegad don par radio programmer. Aitso program, just like last few weeks, is a current affairs program. Ya programmer ami kuincha party kya candidate ka promote korinan. We seek to know more about the candidate, his or her values and principles, the policies of his or her party, and share with them the needs of this community. Amcha studio eyes asa Michael Wood Labour Party so candidate for Mount Roskill. Mr. Wood's parliamentary responsibilities are spokesperson for ethnic affairs, revenue and consumer affairs. Ani tache sangati charcha and ulong amcha community than Hector D'Souza, Eric Bonamis, and Audrey Saldana aga eyes azar asat. So I do hope it's okay to call you by your first name, Michael.
Of course it is. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Great. Thank you. Welcome to our Konkani radio program, Susegad Donpar.
It's a real pleasure to be here. And thank you. I apologise. I'm running a little bit late this afternoon. It's a hectic campaign day, so it's nice to be able to sit here and have a good chat at this time.
For a moment, I thought you put us on the back burner as such.
So, Michael, tell us something about yourself, your profession, your family, and as to how you came into politics.
That's a good question to start off our conversation. Well, look, I've been actively involved in the Labour Party for quite a number of years. I first became involved at university back in 1999, just before Helen Clark came in fact. I came from a family that wasn't particularly politically active, actually. But I became interested in politics. Well, really part of it was my own faith. I have a Christian faith. I'm an Anglican. Mm-hmm. And really a couple of key things come out of that. One is I think that every single person should be treated with dignity and respect. And I also believe that we're supposed to live together in communities. We're not just individuals. And those two key beliefs that I have really speak to a kind of politics that I believe the Labour Party best represents. And so I became active at university, worked in the retail sector, became involved in a union while I was working in the retail sector as well. I learned a bit more about trade unions and working people being treated fairly, and spent a number of years as a union negotiator. While I was at university, I started out doing a law degree. And I got so interested in politics that I sort of started to have less time to deal with that. And I also met a very beautiful woman who I fell in love with. And that meant I had even less time. And so I never finished the law degree, but I finished a politics degree and sort of, I guess, set out on my political path and met my wife, Julie. And we later got married and have three lovely young boys, aged 9, 7 and 2. We live in Roskill South. We've been there for 13 years in our house. And I love serving my community. I've been on the local board and local government there for a number of years before I was a Member of Parliament. And yeah, part of the joy of being a Member of Parliament is that you get to be a voice for your own community. And I just want to make sure everyone in our communities got the opportunities that I've got.
So Michael, I'll take the next question here. Your party has experienced a phenomenal yo-yo sort of like, you know, movement in the recent polls. Yeah. One day it is national, then it is Labour, then it is national once again. Yeah. So how do you think your Labour Party is going to catapult from a 25% percentage right up to the majority forming government?
Well, it's been an extraordinary rebound.
Yeah.
Because, as you say, we know that a couple of months ago it was looking very, very tough for the Labor Party.
Yeah.
How's that happened? Well, I think a couple of things. I think, to begin with, people have been looking around for a change for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I'm out there that people have been very concerned about those issues, like housing in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a real crisis with housing out there. It costs so much to buy a place, poor state of rentals, all sorts of issues. Range of other issues as well that people are just frustrated by, and they feel that Nationals had 9 years but are not doing anything there. But they weren't quite previously seeing us as the answer. And I think what's happened is that since Jacinda came into the role of the leadership, she just speaks with such clarity and passion and conviction that people suddenly can see that, yes, the Labor Party is the party that's got some answers in these important areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people were ready for us, but they were waiting for us to get ourselves into shape so that we could be a viable new government. And they're seeing that now. It's going to be a close election, but we've got a great chance of changing the government.
Okay, best of luck.
So your party tagline is, let's do this, right? The policy is put on the table and then pulled back, or sometimes put into a black pot for the expert group to pull out a solution. Now, you have done a U-turn on tax as well. So what exactly does let's do this mean for you?
Yeah. Well, let's do this is about saying we're going to be a government of action,
mm-hmm.
that we have all of these really big issues sitting in front of us, whether it's the housing crisis, houses over $1 million, that locks out most young couples in Auckland, whether it's the transport situation in Auckland where the congestion's just got worse and worse and worse, whether it's community concerns around crime, underfunding in health and education. We're saying we're going to be a government that won't shy away from taking action on these issues. And so in housing, for example, we've said, yeah, we'll take really strong action. We'll ban non-resident purchase of houses. We'll build 100,000 new homes over 10 years. These are bold steps. In the climate change space, we've said that we will take very strong action. We're not just going to keep putting these issues off, which is what the current government's done. And when you mentioned the tax area, that's an area where we have said we need to have change. The current government's just saying, well, we're just going to leave it as it is. We're going to let house prices carry on. What we're saying is we think actually we really need to look at making changes in the tax area, but we're going to be responsible about it. We're not going to make up policy on the hoof during an election campaign. We'll get the experts in, we'll consult with the community, and we'll come up with the changes that we think will make a real difference and make housing more affordable. The change we've had this week is we just got feedback from people saying, well, we want to be able to vote on it before you implement anything.
That's right.
And I think we sort of we looked at it and we thought that's fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll do the work, we'll put forward the legislation, but then if there are major changes, people will have the opportunity to vote on it before the 2020 election.
Okay. So Audrey, I'll take the next question. So before I go to my question, Michael, I'd just like to say what a privilege it is to have an elected Member of Parliament of New Zealand sitting with us here on Susega Dhanpar. So, Dio Bore Korun Tumka. And that means thank you.
Thank you.
Konkani.
It's a pleasure to be here.
My question, Michael, is many people have their own interests uppermost in their mind, and such interest groups could potentially upset your focus on getting the basics right. As a union negotiator, how do you prioritize the basics among the seemingly multiplicity of basics?
It's a really good question. And of course, as a government, you are faced with a whole range of issues and a whole range of perspectives and a whole range of interests. And I'm always a believer that in any organisation or any campaign or anything that you're doing, one of the most important things is to have clarity about what's really important, and to decide what you're going to focus on and therefore what you are not going to focus on. And so we're being really clear. Look, as a new government coming in, we're not going to be able to do everything at once. Yeah. That's a recipe for just being all over the place. So we're going to be really tightly focused on the things that we think will make the biggest difference for people. And we're just being really clear about what those are. It's housing, because I don't think there's anything more basic in a society than decent housing for everyone. Good health and education by putting more funding into those areas. So we're not going to cut taxes like National. You know, that gives people like me on an MP salary a tax reduction. I'd rather see that money go into our schools and hospitals. And we're going to build a high-quality public transport network for Auckland. Those are some of the key areas we're really going to focus on. Some of the other things might take a bit more time, but that's what we're going to put our focus.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
Okay, Michael. So Labour Party opened up immigration in 1999. Yeah. And that's quite a few in this room, like, and I actually come through that policy.
All of us in this room.
In this room, yeah. Right. Come, thank you. Now it appears there's a serious thinking, like, you know, on a different level. And I was reading the National Manifesto, and I was surprised actually with the Labour Manifesto, which actually said that they might reduce the number of immigrants by about 30,000 every year. So what's the actual thinking in the Labour Party about the...
Yeah, sure. So the thinking is that the Labour Party supports us having a good immigration policy, supports a multicultural and diverse community in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was the Labour Party back under David Longey that first opened up immigration. Before that, New Zealand basically had a white New Zealand policy until David Longey came in the 1980s. And that Labour government said, no, we will allow people from any part of the world who come here who can contribute to New Zealand life. And it doesn't matter what the race or country, it's about the contribution people can make. And we continue to support that. Look, in Mount Roskill, I'm proud to represent the electorate that's the most diverse in the whole country. The question is, how do we have a policy that supports our community and our aspirations as a country? Now, at the time that you've indicated that perhaps you came here under the first the previous Labour government, the net immigration levels were around about 30,000 people per year. In fact, most years under Helen Clark and John Key, that's about the level it was. Over the last 2 years, that's ballooned up to about 70,000. Yeah. And that's the highest it's been since the 1870s when New Zealand was being colonised. And that the challenge we've got in Auckland at the moment in particular is we have this housing crisis where we are building thousands fewer houses than we need to house people. That's why young people can't get into a house. We've got a transport problem. And so what Labour simply says is, let's just have a bit of a breather, just ease things back a little bit while we get on top of those infrastructure problems. So our policy would ease the numbers back to about 40 to 50,000 a year. So it's not closing the door. And in fact, it will be more people coming to New Zealand than perhaps when you came here. But it's just bringing it down a little bit from those record levels. And when we're doing that, we also want to make sure that we match people's skills better to the employment opportunities in New Zealand, because at the moment that doesn't work very well for many people as well.
Thank you for that, Michael. We will take a break now, and Richard will play us a song. Tumi Sogli Aikotat Susegad Donpar, and we are in discussion with Michael Wood of the Labour Party about the forthcoming elections with Eric, Audrey and Hector.
Thank you.
तुम्ही ऐकत आहात सुशेगा दनपार प्रोग्रामर मायकल वुड्सक चर्चा करता त्याच्या संगात ऑड्री सल्डाना एरिक बोनोमिस अँड हेक्टर डिसूजा. ऑड्री,
द नेक्स्ट क्वेश्चन फॉर यू मायकल. फॅमिली इज द न्यूक्लियस ऑफ अ व्हायब्रंट कम्युनिटी. As a conscious MP with strong beliefs in family ties and social action, your party are promoting policies such as same-sex marriage, decriminalization of abortion, euthanasia. Why have you taken the stance given the controversial nature of these?
Look, I think in politics you have to speak up for the things that you really believe in. I believe in a kind of politics where we have these debates, where we're honest about our views and we argue for the things that are best for New Zealand. Now, all of those particular issues are their conscience issues rather than issues that parties generally take a party position on. And so on issues like, for example, if we do get to the point of debating euthanasia, end-of-life options, then certainly in the Labour Party, there won't actually be a party position. Individual MPs will decide what their conscience best dictates. If I take that issue, for example, I'm one of those people who actually isn't quite sure what way I would go at this stage. Okay. If you look at, say, David Seymour's bill that he put forward recently, if I had to vote on that today, my vote on it would be no, because I'm just not convinced and comfortable that there are enough protections in there to ensure that vulnerable people don't have pressure put on them. I would, however, probably vote for it on the first reading to allow it to go to a select committee where members of the public could put forward their views by submission. So you take those sort of issues one by one. Mm-hmm. The issue of same-sex marriage, I was someone who supported that, and not all, but most of my Labour colleagues did. And that, to me, comes down to that's an issue of human rights and of treating every person with dignity and respect and not discriminating against people just because they're a bit different from us. And that's a core value for me.
Mm-hmm.
Just to interject you there about this euthanasia bill, which you talked about, Seymour's bill in the parliament as such. If all the boxes are ticked, you say you would vote against for it.
No, I'm saying I'm undecided at this stage on this. I'm very. I describe myself as very cautious about the issue.
Yeah.
My instinctive position is that I lean more towards no than yes.
Okay.
I'm just very concerned about the risks. But I want to keep something of an open mind about it. I believe that the people who put forward the issue put it forward in good faith. Probably like others in this room, I've been with loved ones who have died from terminal illnesses, and boy, it can be tough sometimes. And so I understand why some people want that option, and I want to at least keep a partly open mind so I can listen to them and hear them before making a final position. But my starting position is far more cautious about
because the echo in the Konkani speaking diaspora, and most of us is those who come from the subcontinent, is that this life is being given to you. You don't own it. So what right have you to take it away?
I understand that perspective as well. And that's why I think we need to have a proper community debate about it. And I think if we do get to the point of there being another bill before Parliament, it will be important that at a select committee stage we can have an open dialogue and submissions, and that would enable all parts of the community to come forward and put their views. And there will be different views, and that's the toughest thing about being an MP. You have to listen to all of those and balance them up and look at your own conscience as well. And I think that's one of those issues where you just have to be led by your heart and your conscience in the end. And that's the approach I would take.
Thanks,
but as
Michael.
I say, I'm pretty cautious about it.
Thanks a lot.
So, Michael, let's come to the ecology. Yeah, in the last decade, there has been considerable damage to the ecology. Water resources are highly polluted. And if you see, even now the building codes are being manipulated, and they're reducing the green patches in Auckland. Increased roading networks also have led to this damage. What is your party? Why has it waited for this election to act?
Well, we haven't been in government for 9 years, so we haven't been able to act before now. But we've been consistently raising concerns about these issues. And, the state of New Zealand's waterways is one of those ones that I think's really struck a chord with a lot of people, because we like to talk about New Zealand and think about New Zealand as being clean and green. Yet actually, if you or your kids go swimming in most of our rivers or streams, you'll get sick. Mm-hmm. That's how polluted they have become. And that is just, in my view, is unacceptable. If we go back to the previous discussion, I have a personal view coming out of my faith that the world that we live in is a gift that we've been given as well. And we as people today don't own it. We are just stewards for future generations. And so we absolutely should not be accepting that kind of degradation of our environment. And so that goes to how we look after our water resources. It goes to requiring polluters to pay for the damage they do and not just put it onto the rest of the society. Goes to measures like with climate change, whether we're just going to keep putting out more carbon into our atmosphere or whether we're finally going to take some decisive action to reduce our emissions, actually like most other countries have done. And we can do much better on that. We've got some pretty strong policies in that area.
But tell me, Michael, you're very policy of trying to tax water or trying to tax water that is being used for commercial purposes raised a huge sort of hue and cry in the farming community. Was it that sort of a hue and cry, and was it that sort of a drumbeat from the current ruling government that made you back from your tax propositions?
No, I think it was a genuine case of listening to people and recognising that people saying, look, we want to be able to vote before there's a really major policy change. I think we reflected on that, thought that was a reasonable thing for people to see. But look, on the water issue, you know, we can just keep doing what we're doing. We can ignore it. We can say putting a price on water is too hard and things will keep happening the same as they are now. Yeah, Albert Einstein had a great saying that I often go to. He said, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So we can leave things as they are, and the waterways will keep getting worse. So we can actually take some action to try and change things for the better, and that's what we'll do.
Let's listen to a song now. Tumi Sogli Ai Kotat Susegat Donpar, and we are in discussion with Michael Wood of the Labour Party about the forthcoming elections with Eric, Hector and Audrey.
Lagin tampon na ka shirap lag. so ai tunane nore pati soro aguaruro laskar sa puinache
You are listening to Sushika Tanpar, and we are in conversation with Michael Woods, with Eric, Hector. And with Audrey. So, yeah, Hector, okay. You have a question for Michael.
Yeah. Michael, it's been really nice having this conversation with you and listening to you espouse the views of your own views and the views of the Labour Party. My question to you is now on education. In education, the national standards have come under criticism both domestically and internationally. The overemphasis on grading has overlooked factors that influence the performance of the child, the other factors that inform, impact on the performance of the child. What is your party's alternative, if you are, or views on this?
Thank you. It's a very good question because, nothing's more important than the education we give to our kids. The way that the national standards have been brought in by the current national government has really narrowed the focus in education. And you made that point really well. It kind of brings it down to ticking certain boxes instead of looking at the full breadth of opportunity for a child's learning. And the fact that kids learn in different ways, for example. I think about my three kids and they're all exceptionally different and I want an education system which recognises that and helps each of them to flower. So what the Labour Party has said is that because of that, we will scrap the current national standards scheme.
Oh.
Parents do still want, they want to be able to understand their child's progress, so we need to keep that within the system. We have clear, plain English reporting to assist with that. But what we have in New Zealand is one of the best curriculums in the world, and it's internationally recognised as being a wide curriculum that encourages children to learn, that encourages them to inquire, that encourages them to expand their knowledge. And so we want to bring it back to the curriculum that we've developed. And that will be the basis for assessment under a Labour government. And that curriculum was developed in partnership with the teaching profession, with parents, with experts. And we think that's the best thing to go back to. The truth about national standards is that they're not national and they're not standards. And actually the way that they get assessed in one school is often very different to the way they get assessed in another school. So they don't even do what they're supposed to do. Whereas if we go back to the New Zealand curriculum, that's a curriculum which can apply across the country but has the breadth within it to really help children to learn well.
So you already have a format to put up?
Correct. Yes, that's the policy.
Or is
that
it in a working group or something?
No, we're very clear about that one and we've been doing a lot of work with the teaching profession. And one of the things I'd say in education generally is that the current government has, I think, disrespected the teaching profession, actually. And we actually want to work more collaboratively with teachers around this kind of thing. Look, if the government started telling doctors how to diagnose their patients, the doctors would say, what are you doing? And we'd think that was ridiculous. But we currently have a national government that basically tries to tell teachers how to teach. We'll respect the profession and work with them and support them instead of bullying them.
Great, great. That's great to hear. Thanks.
So, Michael, in today's economy, there's one big elephant in the room. Yeah, and we all agree, that you've spoken about it, and that is housing. Yeah. So it's actually spiraled out of control. Everybody, has a problem, trying to acquire a house at this at a very high rate. Yeah? So, what are the Labour Party's monetary, fiscal, and regulatory action plan? And I've got another question after this, but we can go after this.
Okay, I'll make a start. Look, it's our top priority. Mm-hmm. Decent housing is the foundation of a decent society in many ways, I think. And so there are two big issues in housing. One is on the demand side and one is on the supply side. On the demand side, we have a lot of speculative activity, which drives housing prices up. So we've said, for starters, we will stop offshore speculation in the New Zealand housing market. And we're saying, if you want to buy a house, an existing house in New Zealand, you need to be a New Zealand resident. We're just not going to have offshore speculators driving up the prices for New Zealand residents. That's not on. I just don't understand why the current government allows it. We'll make changes to the tax laws, like extending the bright line test to 5 years, which is what the Treasury actually advised the government to do, and they ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
But that we think that's sensible advice. And we'll stop some of the stuff that happens with our tax laws that allows tax losses on residential properties to be transferred, and that advantages speculators over first-home buyers. So those measures will help to dampen down the speculation. But then on the supply side, we've just got to build a lot more affordable houses. At the moment in Auckland, we need to build 13,000 houses per year to keep up with demand. We're only going to build 10,000 this year. And so every year the problem gets worse and the price goes up. So our plan for that is for the government to take responsibility, and we're going to start a Kiwi Build plan, which will start building affordable houses and ramp up to build 10,000 per year for 10 years. Those will be affordable houses in about the $400,000 to $500,000 mark, targeted at first home buyers.
Yeah.
And we think that's the biggest thing we can do to make a difference, to make housing affordable for people again.
Yeah, Michael, just to ask, so those houses will be only available to first home buyers? Are you seeing that?
That's correct. That they're the people we really want to help out. And if I can give an example, my own example, in fact, my wife and I were able to buy our house in Mount Roskill South. It's a basic house, three-bedroom house, for under $300,000. And that was back in 2003. The same house would now cost nearly $1 million, which would just put it out of reach for us in the same position. So we're going to target those, you know, first-home buyers again. And we think that's a way of getting the best impact, making the best difference, giving young people a really good start in the life. People will still have to work hard and save hard to get into one of those houses, but it will be possible. Whereas for most people at the moment, looking for a first time, it's just impossible.
Yeah. And just one clarification, if I may. You said about offsetting the loss on house property against other income. Do you mean the loss every year which you incur on a residential property, or not a residential, but a investment property?
Investment property, yeah.
Will not be allowed. Will you ring fence it? Is that what is
correct? Ring fencing is the term. So okay, cool. You won't lose that tax credit effectively. You'll still be able to offset against the property, but you won't be able to transfer it onto other businesses.
Salary income, for example.
As you can at the moment, potentially. That loophole effectively makes it more makes it cheaper for people who are investing and speculating than it is for a person who's trying to buy their first home. And actually, that will collect a bit of extra tax income. And what we're going to do with that is target that extra tax income to provide insulation grants for homeowners and landlords to improve the quality of the housing stock. So there'll be a good outcome for many people out of that.
Well, you could use it to reduce this tax on salary income.
we could, but we think healthy houses are probably the top priority.
Michael, another question on the housing, because this is a burning issue. Both Labour and National have come up with their own policies here, which pretty much, like, if you read, like, they are near about same. Is there one particular policy where Labour has thought about which probably National hasn't thought of and will make a big difference in the elections?
You're talking about in housing in particular?
Yeah, in housing in particular.
Yeah, well, look, the Kiwi Build program is the big difference. In the end, we're talking about the government building houses at a big scale, building affordable houses at a big scale. The National Government just isn't doing that. They sort of slowly and grudgingly said that they're going to build some more social houses, but nothing like the 100,000 affordable houses over 10 years that Labor is planning. I think that will be the big change that we can deliver, and it's one of the very clear contrasts. National is very sort of pure about this kind of thing. They really don't believe that it's the role of government to get involved in this kind of thing. From the Labour Party's point of view, we see, look, there's a problem here. Mm-hmm. There's a market failure. There are people who are suffering as a result of it. It's our job to do something about that.
Okay, thank you.
We've talked a lot about housing, so I'm going to ask you a question on child poverty. We don't have data in this country, and youth suicides are serious social issues in New Zealand. 15.6 suicides per 100,000, worst amongst OECD countries. What's Labour Party's game plan to tackle these problems?
Mm. Look, these are real problems, and the suicide rate that we have is heartbreaking. 600 people last year who ended their own lives. And they're real priorities for us. So let's start with the child poverty. Labour thinks that this should be one of our top priorities, and Jacinda Ardern's taken a particular interest in this issue. Now, on the point about measurements, there are, in fact, a whole range of measurements about child poverty in New Zealand. The current government chooses to ignore most of them. What Labour has said is we will make this a priority in this way. Every year we have the budget, and at the budget you hear about whether the government's in surplus or whether it's in deficit. We are going to embed a new target into the budget where we will report every single year on our rates of child poverty in New Zealand so that we can actually track the difference that we are making through our policies. And every budget, that will be there, and we will be held accountable for that. So we won't be hiding the problem anymore or saying it doesn't really exist, which is what this national government does. We'll be putting it there and then taking measures to make a difference by improving housing, by improving family incomes, by targeting support at families who we know really need it, particularly in those first 3 years of life. On the broader issue of mental health and suicide, something Jacinda's spoken about a great deal, and most people in New Zealand know someone who sadly has taken their own life or tried to. It's been ignored when a group of people who were concerned about this issue earlier this year tried to present the People's Mental Health Report to the Minister of Health, Jonathan Coleman. He said they were just a bunch of left-wing activists and refused to meet with them. Labor takes this very seriously. So we've announced that we're going to invest, firstly, in more community-based mental health teams so that people have the resources they need. But probably most importantly, we're going to put mental health nurses and teams in every single secondary school, because we know that particularly for young people, when they get into dark places, when they get lost, they feel they have no one to talk to, that's a danger time. And they need someone who will walk alongside them and support them, not with a one-off appointment and then they wait for another 3 months, but someone who can be there every day to help them through those difficult times and get them back on track. And the school environment's the best place to do that. So those are two major policies that we'll put in place that we think can make a real difference there.
Thank you.
Michael, I'll ask you a question on employment. The economy is a two-legged race. It relies purely on tourism and on the primary sector, and probably to a lesser extent on education. There are no industries that support the aspirations of local youth, so who are being trained for global business and with no domestic or local experiences. So how does labour going to try to tackle this issue?
Look, the starting comment you make, which is about that a large part of our economy is based on the primary sector and tourism, is mm-hmm. correct. Mm-hmm. It's also a problem.
Yeah.
Those two sectors are important. We want them to do well. But successful economies are more diversified than that. And the truth is that most of the products that we sell from the primary sector are relatively low-value products. And most of them, they go up and down depending on commodity prices. And most of the jobs, not all, but most of the jobs supported by the tourism sector are relatively low-wage jobs. So we need those sectors, but we need more. Yeah,
absolutely.
We need to be developing the higher-value sector of the economy. And I'll give you one example of how we're going to do that. At the moment, New Zealand has some of the biggest plantations of forests in the world outside of, I think, Russia in the central North Island. What we do at the moment is we chop down those trees, we put them on a ship, and we send them off to China or somewhere else to be processed. What Labour wants to do is actually do more of the processing work here, so we actually get more value out of those products, we employ people in higher value jobs, and we bring more income into the country. And in the case of that particular issue, we're going to establish an advanced wood processing plant in Gisborne in a joint venture with the private sector to lead the way on that sort of development. And across a whole range of other areas, other parts of the economy, we're going to have some more of those sort of smart investments to lift the value of our economic activity to provide higher value jobs for people. The other good example there is at Dunedin University, they've got a fantastic digital economy component at the university there, and we're going to invest to turn that into a centre of excellence so we can get smart young software engineers from all over the world coming in and developing high-value products that we can sell. We've got to uplift the value of our economy.
Is there any thinking on mining, to open up mining?
I wouldn't say that we think that's a big part of our economic future. So we currently have mining operations, and there will be further mining operations under a Labor government. But fundamentally, relying on extractive industries potentially compromises the tourism sector that we've talked about. Mm-hmm. There often are, not always, but often are environmental impacts that I think New Zealanders are increasingly cautious about. And we just need to bear those things in mind. And it's also the model of economic development you're talking about there, which is about pulling things out of the land and selling them, is actually not a particularly sophisticated economic model. We think the better way is going into the higher value products and services that get the best possible price on international markets.
Okay.
What are you planning to do to correct the regional growth? Everything seems to be in Auckland.
That's a really, really good point. Actually, lots of people raise it with us. And so I suppose going back to my previous comments, we're going to really invest in regional economic development. So things like those initiatives I talked about in Gisborne and Dunedin. We're going to work with the Whakatane District Council to dredge their harbour. Why would we do that? Because they've got a huge economic opportunity around aquaculture, shellfish growing out at sea that we can sell for great prices on world markets. But their harbour's too shallow to let the ships in to really get the volume coming through. So we can partner with them to help unlock the opportunities in that region. And when we start creating those jobs in those regions, it becomes more viable for people to live there. And if we could spread some of the growth around a bit more instead of just always in Auckland, that would certainly help with some of the challenges that we have. At the same time, the reality is Auckland is going to keep growing. Why? Because it's a great place to live and it has lots of advantages. Mm-hmm. So we've still got to put the infrastructure into Auckland to deal with the transport and the housing and the other issues.
So we still have time for one last question. Anybody wants to have a go? Because he's not still taken off his jacket.
You're going to have to really work hard to get me to take the jacket off.
Let me try here. So Auckland, we know that Auckland is one of the most expensive cities in the world. One of them. It's actually ranking 16th, but it could probably go up, mainly driven by the housing. So is there any particular, you've talked about regional moving, but is there anything else that we want to, because lots of, you can see there are reports of teachers and others who are actually now moving or migrating away from Auckland. So is there anything to make Auckland less expensive, it's going to also affect migrants coming into Auckland?
My kids' school, there have been three teachers, I think, who have headed out of Auckland for that region. They just can't ever see themselves buying a house. The housing is the area that we think we can make the biggest impact because it's the biggest proportion of people's outgoings. A lot of people spend between 30 to 50% of their income on housing in Auckland. And actually, the experts say if you're spending more than 30%, that's starting to become actually quite unaffordable and probably most people in Auckland are. Mm-hmm. So that's the area we can make the very, very biggest difference for people. There are some other things we can do. For example, one of the policies we've got is to target a winter heating allowance at people on low incomes, our pensioners, beneficiaries, just to help them with some of those additional costs that come through. But the other thing, it's on the other side. There are the costs here, but there's also wages. And look, we're the Labor Party. We've always been the party of people being paid fairly for the work that they contribute. And we have got a problem with a low-wage economy. And if we can get on top of that, that's going to help people with the costs. And so that's things like having fairer wages and fairer bargaining situations. And it's also about increasing our productivity, because if our productivity stays low, we'll become a low-wage economy. We need to change that.
Cool. Thank you.
Te obore koru, Michael. It means thank you, Michael, for coming on our program and sharing about yourself, the political party you represent, and the policies that you and your party want for the New Zealanders.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure, and thank you to the Kolkani community for listening today.
Thank you, Michael.
Next time you come, you'll have to speak a little Konkani.
I'll make sure you teach me a few good phrases before I leave today.
Okay.
Thanks, team.
Thank you.
Thank you.
नौवें जीवन सुर करता नौवें जवान जीवता मुनशा कुल आई चा दीसा मोदी चा फैसता नौवें जीवन सुर करता नौवें जवान जीवता मुनशा कुल आई चा दीसा मोदी चा फैसता जीवन सुर करता नौवें जवान ज्योता मुनशा कुल आई चा दीसा मोदी चा फैसता
पक्षाव काढून भेंडार हाडतात कणशी पयले देवाळाक देवा सरशी फुलां उडोवंक आयल्या नेणटी भुरगीं उल्लास जाला मोती मोरी एक सरगी बिमली तेंडली तोशी सोदून सगल्या पेंटे सांगो भेंडा घोसाळी हाडल्यान आलून देंटे बिमली तेंडली तोशी सोदून सगल्या पेंटे सांगो भेंडा घोसाळी हाडल्यान आलून देंटे नवेंच जीवन सुरू करता नवें जवान जेवता मनशाकूल आयच्या दिसा मोतीच्या फेस्ता बेजार केली खणशी घरांत हाडल्या दिवो पेटोन आलतारी वयर मांडल्यात सरलेल्या आल्मांचो उडास काडला मालगड्यांचे दोळे तुकान बुजल्या भुरगीं राखून रावल्या नारळाच्या रोसाक रोसाक कणशी भरसून नवे आसा ती येवक भुरगीं राखून रावल्या नारळाच्या रोसाक रोसाक कणशी भरसून नवे आसा ती येवक नवेंच जीवन सुरू करता नवें जवान जेवता मनशाकूल आयच्या दिसा मोतीच्या फेस्ता नवेंच जीवन सुरू करता नवें जवान जेवता मनशाकूल आयच्या दिसा मोतीच्या फेस्ता
मोतीच्या फेस्ता
नवेंच जीवन सुरू करता नवें जवान जेवता मनशाकूल आयच्या दिसा मोतीच्या फेस्ता